It's Wednesday, January 6th, and November wasn't a fluke. We start here.
I am going to the Senate to work for all of Georgia.
Georgia has now delivered one seat to the Democrats, and it might just give them full control of the Senate as well.
Is Georgia now a purple state? Is it a real swing state? Is it even a little bit blue?
Did this just redefine America's political landscape? Ballots are still coming in. We will tell you what we know and what we're waiting on. Meanwhile, today's the day Congress stands up to say American elections work. That's not what's about to happen, though.
What is going to happen here today will not change the outcome of the election, but it will be a show for an audience of one.
However, Mike Pence has told President Trump this is not about to go the way you think. And prosecutors say shooting a man in the back was not a criminal offense.
He believes Jacob Blake had a knife in his hand and was resisting arrest.
Why windows are boarded up again in Kenosha, Wisconsin. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When the smoke cleared from the 2020 election, the storylines seemed clear. Joe Biden had managed to harness a huge turnout for a decisive victory. But in Congress, it was far from united. Democrats now barely had a lead in the House, and Republicans would hold the Senate, barring a miracle in two Georgia runoffs. After all, turnout, it's never the same for a runoff election, right? You're really going to hype people up that much twice? Well, yesterday, Democrats got their answer, and the ballots came pouring in.
It is now past 7 o'clock on the East Coast, and the polls have closed in the runoff that will decide the balance of power in Washington.
Now, if you were looking at the top line numbers, you started the night going, wow, the Democrats are doing pretty well.
With 31% of the vote in, Ossoff is actually outperforming Joe Biden in Cobb County.
John Ossoff was leading Senator David Perdue. Reverend Raphael Warnock was leading Senator Kelly Loeffler by even more. Then, this big batch of votes came in from rural areas. Suddenly, the Republicans had taken the lead.
Just as you were speaking, Rick, the race changed again. Now we have Senator Perdue up by 3,000 votes.
And if you just focused on all that, you would have whiplash, blue mirage, red mirage. But if you were looking at these specific batches of results and you compared them to the presidential election, a surprising consistent trend was emerging here. In county after county, the Democrats were doing even better than Joe Biden had.
It happening right before we came on the air. ABC News now projecting that Democrat Raphael Warnock will win his race. He has a several thousand vote lead over GOP Senator Kelly Loeffler.
But in two races you would expect to be identical, we have two different updates for you this morning. ABC News can now project that Reverend Raphael Warnock will win his race. He will be the next senator from Georgia for at least the next 2 years. But remember, Democrats need two. And while John Ossoff has grabbed a lead, we have not projected that race. Not yet. So let's dig into this with ABC News political director Rick Klein and Perry Bacon Jr., a senior writer with our partners at 538. Rick, you're still on the set of where we were doing live coverage last night. Why would we project Warnock and not Ossoff? What are you guys seeing?
Well, in the case of Raphael Warnock, he's got a numerical advantage. He's actually leading.
And so, Georgia, I am honored by the faith that you have shown in me. And I promise you this tonight. I am going to the Senate to work for all of Georgia.
In the case of John Ossoff, it's just razor thin, but there's more than enough vote out there in predominantly Democratic areas. That's what Democrats are looking at right now. That race may be in a recount, maybe a little more likely than the other race. But as that vote comes in, we've just seen better and better numbers for the Democrats.
And this may have all of them. We're looking at 1.244 million votes, which was more than we anticipated, actually. We were looking at that's today. That's Election Day votes.
It's clear that the turnout was through the roof, and it actually happened in both parties. Donald Trump was good for Republican turnout. He's probably good once again for Democratic turnout. And it was an open question as to whether voters who elected Joe Biden would also try to deliver him a Senate. We saw a lot of ticket splitters in this state and many other states. Republicans always have advantages in these runoffs, particularly in a state like Georgia. The conventional wisdom coming in is that they look pretty good.
Were you hesitant at all to vote?
Well, no, not at
the first time, but I was this time.
This time?
Yes.
You thought about whether or not you wanted to even turn out.
Well, yeah, because I wondered if my vote really mattered.
But there seemed to have been a little bit more backlash than Republicans might have intended out of this. And it's also possible that a few Republicans stayed home knowing that the president had been railing against election fraud.
Hey, Perry Bacon Jr., does that mean, are people voting for one guy and not the other? Like, I would assume you would just vote for two Ds or for two Rs, right? So how is Warnock outperforming not just John Ossoff, but even Joe Biden?
So in terms of, it looks like Warnock is going to do a little bit better than Ossoff in terms of the margin. You can come with a lot of things, but one thing we know from a lot of research is that people who are elected incumbents do better than people who are appointed to their seats.
I thank you from the bottom of my heart. We got lots of things to go out, but we got some work to do here. This is a game of inches. We're going to win this election. We're going to save this country.
So what might be happening is it looks like David Perdue is probably a little bit more popular than Kelly Loeffler is. That's my guess as to why Perdue is doing a little bit better. In terms of Joe Biden versus the Democrats, there was a big, I think Rick is right. We probably are going to learn that some voters were turned off by these last couple months of Trump's behavior and his contesting election. I also think that what we don't know is there were tens of thousands of people who did not vote in the initial election.
I have more friends than I've ever had in my life, in my voting career, which hasn't been that long, outvoting. I mean, really. So
one big thing is the Democrats in Georgia focused on getting swing voters, but they also made a big push at turning out people in the Atlanta area, finding people who didn't vote in the original election, turning out people of color, particularly people under age 40. So a lot of the things kind of Stacey Abrams and other people in Democratic politics have been involved in trying to change Georgia in like a 10-year period by really trying to organize and push out people in the Atlanta area to vote appears to have put them over the top in this race.
Well, and Perry, you're also just a student of political parties in general. So, I mean, when you look at, these razor-thin margins, but regardless of who wins, what did this night mean for Republicans?
This is, the Republican Party generally wins elections in the South, particularly in Georgia. And, in an election night, I sort of assumed, okay, Biden is a particular kind of Democrat. He appeals to black voters. He also appeals to older white voters. He appeals to some swing voters. So maybe it's just a one-off and the Republicans are still strong in Georgia and win most races.
Unfortunately, too many folks in our party over the last 2 months have been talking about misinformation, election fraud, and creating a distraction. We've been outworked, outfocused, but
that might still be the case, but the Republicans appear to have lost here to Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, who neither of whom has looked elected to anything before. So this is not like being defeated by Joe Biden, a pretty talented politician who's won a lot of races.
Yeah, I think win or lose here, this is a pivot point for the Republican Party.
And now you've got to look at your Republican Party. You've got to be thinking, oh, Georgia is really, it was an aberration. This is real. Georgia's a real swing state. We have to fight for Georgia. Does Georgia go the way of Virginia or states that, flipped to the Democrats and never really flipped back? I'm not predicting that, but it's something you've got to be thinking of the Republican Party looking at this result. Is Georgia now a purple state? Is it a real swing state? Is it even a little bit blue?
Okay, well, so I assume Democrats in Georgia are just thrilled. But Democrats in Washington, does this matter if they don't get to 50? Because, Rick, put me in Washington. What is the difference between 49 Democratic votes in the Senate and 50, where all of a sudden Kamala Harris is like breaking ties for you? Because it seems significant to swing the Senate, but it's also not like Joe Biden would get to ram through every bill that he likes, right?
Yeah, before I covered Washington politics, I used to think, what's the, 49 or 50, who cares? It's enormous. It changes everything. Everything from where your offices are and how much staff you get, up to who has subpoena power as committee chairman. The most important thing is who controls the Senate calendar.
We will be able to pass $2,000 stimulus checks for the people next week. when we win these races in Georgia. And
the fact that Chuck Schumer could control it instead of Mitch McConnell means that you can guarantee a vote on anyone that, that Joe Biden is going to appoint to a judgeship, to a cabinet appointment, any piece of legislation. You can't guarantee what the vote result will be, but you can at least bring it to the floor.
Right. Mitch McConnell, or like, so Mitch McConnell hasn't been allowing that $2,000 check to even like go to a vote because that's a vote that could make Republicans look bad. Right? Like, you don't want to vote against that. Well, suddenly you have to vote for or against that.
That's right. It's the difference between having to cut deals and scrape for everything to get Mitch McConnell in your good graces on something versus just saying, hey, Chuck, can you do this for us? It is enormously consequential for the first 2 years of the President-elect Biden's first term to have control of the House and the Senate. It means he has so much more power and sway to get his appointments through and to just start to enact an agenda.
Right. Perry Bacon Jr., did Joe Manchin, like the moderate Democrat, you know, almost conservative Democrat from West Virginia, did he just become, I guess, the most powerful person in Washington? He gets to decide whether bills go through, perhaps.
You know, I don't think it'll be just Joe Manchin, but I'm guessing it'll be some combination of Joe Manchin and Sinema in the Democratic caucus, and maybe Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney, Susan Collins in the Republican caucus. I think you're going to have this centrist block of within the two parties that'll be able to dictate a lot.
Right. And so just so everyone's still on the same page, Warnock is in. We have projected he will win that race. John Ossoff and David Perdue are still very close, but the remaining vote is almost all from the Atlanta area. It would be really tough for a Republican to somehow come back from that. But we're still in potential recount territory. So Perry Bacon Jr., Rick Klein there on the set. Thank you so much, guys.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Next up on Start Here, whoever won, their new colleagues have a debacle on their hands. We will take you to a climactic day in Washington after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November. And while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
If the Liberal Democrats take the Senate and the White House, And they're not taking this White House. We're going to fight like hell, I'll tell you right now.
Now, as these votes get counted in Georgia, all the candidates involved there essentially have said these results can be trusted. But in Washington, later today, you're about to have more than 100 elected lawmakers say American election results cannot be trusted. They will have no proof. Most of them just claim victory in November elections themselves. But they will essentially be asking, on the record, to cast the votes of an election aside. You thought Georgia sounded like a wild ride. It is about to be a chaotic day in Washington with ramifications that could linger for years. Let's go to ABC's chief White House correspondent, Jonathan Carl, and our senior congressional correspondent, Mary Bruce. And Mary, let's start with you. What is the plan on the floor of Congress today?
Well, the plan is that normally this is something that is basically routine, right? Congress certifying the results of the Electoral College.
Mr. President, the objection is in writing, signed by a member of the House of Representatives, but not yet by a member of the United States
Senate. In that case, the objection cannot be entertained.
But now we are going to see instead what is likely to be a very long, drawn-out process, and one that is unprecedented.
And I want to thank Senator Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and all of the incredible senators that have stepped up to fight.
I think you have to take a step back and realize no sitting president has tried to hang on to power like this by challenging the Electoral College. And this has, instead of a routine process, become a loyalty test to President Trump.
On January 6th, I will object to the Electoral College vote.
So instead of going ahead and certifying the results of the Electoral College, you are going to see 13 Republican senators at least and more than 100 House representatives all planning to object to the results, objecting to the will of the people.
Then the Trump campaign tried to go to court to say, hold on, and the court threw him out without even hearing the substance.
Senator, but
the Supreme Court
didn't take up that case either. They did.
So we don't have the court stepping in to resolve it. And that's why I think Congress has a responsibility. We have an independent obligation to the Constitution.
What is going to happen here today will not change the outcome of the election, but it will be a show for an audience of one. And it is something that Republican leader Mitch McConnell has urged Republicans not to do. But what you will see is them stand up and object formally to, we believe, at least three states that we know of, Arizona, Georgia, and Pennsylvania. And Republicans contest the results in those states, even though, as you say, the courts have repeatedly not found any evidence of widespread voter fraud. But the president is demanding this, insisting that he won, even though we know he did not. And now those most loyal to him in Congress are backing up the president.
And I want to assure you, I share the concerns of millions of Americans about voting irregularities. And I promise you, come this Wednesday, we'll have our day in Congress. We'll hear the objections.
And of course, Brad, in a really bizarre twist to all of this, remember, overseeing all of this is the vice president.
Our great vice president comes through for us. He's a great guy. Of course, if he doesn't come through, I won't like him quite as much. Nah, Mike is a great guy.
So let's talk about the White House with Jonathan Carl. Because, John, we heard President Trump pressure a Georgia official to overturn election results. He did that in private, and it was news. He's basically pressuring his vice president to do the same thing, right? Just to say, like, no, actually, these are the election results. But he's just doing that to him in public.
He sure is. I think, first, Brad, I think it's important to point out that although you have this crazy situation where you have over 100 Republicans in the House expected to come forward and make these objections, joined by 13 senators, Republican senators, it's significant that this has divided the Republican Party in a way in which few things in my experience covering Washington have ever divided either party.
Many millions of us had hoped the presidential election would yield a different result. But our system of government has processes to determine who will be sworn in on January the 20th.
Mitch McConnell, who is the Republican leader in the Senate, the next to Donald Trump, the most powerful Republican in Washington, has said not only that he opposes this, But this vote against an effort to challenge the election results will be the most important vote of his career.
Senator Mitt Romney of Utah writing in a statement, "I could have never imagined seeing these things in the greatest democracy in the world. Has ambition, so eclipse principle."
You know, I'm here because I stand with President Donald Trump.
Now, as for the vice president, he's going to be presiding over all of this. Right. And Donald Trump believes somehow that this is means that he has a chance to rule as if he were the presiding judge. Of course, he's not. It's a ceremonial role.
Mr. Speaker, the vice president and the United States Senate.
He basically has the gavel. He reads from a script that is literally provided by the parliamentarian.
The Senate and House of Representatives are meeting in a joint session to verify the certificates and count the votes of the electors of the several states.
And he has no power to actually rule himself. But Donald Trump and some of his more hardcore allies believe that the vice president on his own can decide that certain batches of electors from certain states are not accepted and won't be recognized. I've had conversations with people very close to the vice president, although he has not spoken publicly on this, to respond to Trump on this. My understanding is that Vice President Pence will play it straight, and he is going to make the president of the United States very angry.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting that Vice President Pence is personally just planning on not following the script that the president wants him to follow. But, I mean, Mary, could he do that? Like, yesterday in Pennsylvania, we saw Republicans in their state house literally refuse to seat a Democratic winner.
We cannot swear anybody in until the gentleman from the 45th district removes himself from the rostrum.
Just like the national election, like, these results had been certified by the state. Republicans refused to acknowledge the results. There were, like, shouting matches on the floor. It got super ugly.
To not seat and certify a gentleman who's done that qualified through the court system, recognize the Constitution of Pennsylvania, suggests that you're breaking those rules.
What prevents that kind of chaos from happening here if the vice president did just say, no, these are the electors, I decide that?
Well, look, the Constitution is very clear in the role of Congress here. And while some Republicans believe that it should be up to Congress and not the Electoral College and not the will of the voters to determine who is the next president.
Which, like, every state would say, no, that's not your role.
Look, it is simply the fact that it doesn't seem likely that Republicans are going to have the numbers to actually overturn the results of this election. And that, as John mentions, is because of Mitch McConnell. He has made very clear, look, he is in charge of the Senate, and he does not think that this is the right course of action. He is adamant in that. And it is why it has created such a giant division within the Republican Party. I mean, Donald Trump's parting gift here is really sabotaging his own party as he walks out the door.
I can tell you, Sean, any senator or any congressman that does not, meaning on this side, that does not fight tomorrow, I'm telling you, will not, their political career is over, because the MAGA movement is going, it's going nowhere.
I think you're seeing clearly some Republicans looking beyond Trump, and we've seen this in a few ways. I mean, you know, not only this issue, but he had his first veto override, just a few days ago. But there are clearly, you know, a lot of Republicans that are fearful that even after Trump leaves the White House, he's going to have sway.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We're fighting. We're going to fight like you never saw before.
After scenes like this, the last time protesters like the Proud Boys came to town, D.C. officials today were urging local residents to stay home.
Avoid the downtown area and especially avoid people who are coming here to look for confrontation.
Well, and so that makes me wonder, because this is all inside the Capitol we're talking about. Even if all that goes according to plan, you know, people object, but the rule of law carries the day. That doesn't necessarily apply to what people are going to be saying outside the Capitol, right? What are we about to see today on the streets of Washington?
Well, Washington certainly is bracing for very large protests and huge crowds.
Thousands of President Trump's supporters arrive in D.C. to protest the 2020 election results.
This is bigger than Trump. This is bigger than America. We are to save the world from this.
We've already seen a lot of the president's supporters driving through the streets of Washington. And partly that's because the president is inviting them, encouraging them to come and protest. That's the exact opposite, of course, of the message that you're getting from the Washington mayor, who's urging everyone to stay home, to not come out and take to the streets. Because as we've seen in the past few weeks and months, this can lead to violence.
We've got some clashes going on. Someone just ran behind the police line with a big flag.
And there's a very real fear that these political protests may turn into that at some point today.
The leader of Proud Boys was arrested in D.C., accused of burning a Black Lives Matter banner taken from an historic black church.
And you're seeing those streets closed around the White House. You're seeing kind of a fortress building in downtown Washington. We'll see just how much it turns out to be, but Donald Trump is doing everything in his power to try to summon his supporters to the capital city.
Again, it's easy to underestimate just how many voices on the far right seem to be convinced that President Trump still will be president on January 21st. Today is the day that is sort of crucial to that theory of seeing how it works. A world in which the vice president essentially decides who the next president is going to be. John Carl, Mary Bruce, breaking down how this is actually about to go down. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
While all eyes will be on the streets of Washington today, overnight, the concern was on the streets of Kenosha, Wisconsin. That is because yesterday, prosecutors announced that the police officer who shot a black man in the back as he got into a car will face no charges.
Why the f*** y'all just shoot that man? Why the f*** y'all just shoot that f***ing man like that, bro?
We're going to turn out to that breaking news overnight. A police officer shooting a black man multiple times. It was caught on camera and it has sparked anger overnight.
Black Lives Matter!
After a night of protests and violence in Kenosha, the community is waking up to this destruction.
This is the case of Jacob Blake. ABC's Alex Perez was on the scene of demonstrations that turned violent back in August. He is back in Kenosha this morning. Alex, can you just walk me through the decision by prosecutors here yesterday?
Well, Brad, the prosecutor spent a lot of time, a two-hour-long press conference, explaining his decision.
This was a tragedy first and foremost for Jacob Blake, who still suffers from grievous injuries. These are life-lasting injuries that he suffers from today.
Unusual in some parts because he also seemed to wanting to make some sort of connection with the community.
But I want to say that I feel in many ways completely inadequate for this moment.
Expressing how he, as a white man, may not know what it's like to be a black person in America.
I have never had a moment in my whole life where I had to fear for my safety with either police officers or individuals in authority.
He spent a lot of the beginning of his press conference talking about that, but then he got into the evidence.
It is absolutely incontrovertible that Jacob Blake was armed with a knife during this encounter. Uncontrovertible. Most uncontrovertible because Jacob Blake, in all of the times he spoke to DCI, admits he possessed a knife. Even tells us at different times he had the knife in different hands at different times.
One of the key findings, according to the prosecutor, was that he believes Jacob Blake had a knife in his hand and was resisting arrest. So many of us saw that disturbing video where you see Officer Rustin Chesky shoot Jacob Blake in the back seven times. It appears that Blake is sort of walking away from him. And there are other videos that capture that incident before the shooting.
They try to grab, multiple officers try to grab his arms and secure him so he can be cuffed. He admits at one point, officers were trying to handcuff me, but I was able to get up.
Well, the prosecutor says he reviewed all that video and looked at all the evidence, and there simply wasn't enough there, he says, for him to bring this case, to bring charges forward against the officer.
And it is my decision now that I announce today before you that no Kenosha law enforcement officer in this case will be charged with any criminal offense based on the facts and the laws as I will describe them to you now.
This is a slap in the face.
Of course, this is not what the family wanted. They've been calling for charges from day one.
There are Emmett Till moments. That point where you stop in life and ask, where were you when this happened? Where were you when the verdict went down? Because this is going to impact this city, this state, and the nation for many years to come.
You know, this is a big disappointment for them and their attorney.
Well, and so let's talk about the city of Kenosha then, because, you know, we're still getting a sense of the aftermath from the protest overnight. But clearly, as this announcement came out, demonstrators were gearing up for this exact scenario.
Yeah. And you know, Kenosha has been through a lot as a city here. When this happened back in August, you might remember things got very violent at one point. There were two people who were killed, the third who was wounded. Businesses were damaged.
Everybody angry. I'm mad, too. But you don't go taking that out on nobody. You don't go taking that out on the poor man that owns the mattress store.
And this is a smaller town, not necessarily accustomed to seeing some of the things you see in bigger cities. So a lot of people who live here were impacted by what happened. And so they were essentially bracing for anything, as this decision was announced. There's 500 National Guardsmen deployed to just really stand by and be ready should anything occur. Officials here say, you know, protests and marches are okay as long as they remain peaceful. And so they're hoping that things, you know, stay that way. Another reminder of just how fresh the wounds are here in Kenosha. The teenager who was accused of killing two people and wounding a third during the protest back here in August, he appeared in court just hours before the prosecutor's announcement. He pleaded not guilty to all of the charges against him. His attorneys say he was acting in self-defense.
Yeah, again, just such a city on edge. Alex Perez, they're covering it all. Thanks so much, Alex.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing, you know what we really haven't talked about all show? The thing that is still racking the country, COVID-19. Well, remember how frustrated people had been at the vaccine rollout in hospitals. Now think of how flummoxing it'll be for people who don't even work in healthcare. In fact, we are already seeing how challenging it's been just to get people registered for their shot in the first place.
The logistics of doing it, giving the vaccinations, needs to be improved.
In Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis said it is time to start getting seniors vaccinated.
Everyone who's 65 and older who wants a vaccine, we're committed to delivering it.
Well, we have now seen 90-year-olds waiting in lines for hours, which doctors would say is not healthy. So local officials thought, you know, let's have people reserve a spot. But counties had not created these systems ahead of time.
Appointments filled up fast after issues with the website and phone lines.
Phone systems were getting overwhelmed, sometimes with 2,000 calls per minute. Web portals were crashing. So some counties turned to a service that makes reservations all the time. Eventbrite, as in the concert-going app. Well, immediately, there's already an issue with telling an 80-year-old, hey, just sign up online. Many seniors don't have a computer, let alone hit up Eventbrite on the reg.
With the Department of Health, you know, I've told them, put more people on these phones. You know, we need to help out with the phones, because if someone doesn't quite understand the internet, I mean, if you're 85, you may not be totally fluent with the internet.
Which has led to a new problem. Some seniors are signing up for vaccines, heading to a drive-through site, and finding an empty parking lot. That's right, the Tampa Bay Times found fake Eventbrite listings, which was charging people money to reserve a spot for a shot that didn't exist. Officials in Pasco and Pinellas counties are reiterating registration is free. You should not be paying any money to get your reservation. But that is little consolation to residents who are finding real sites and are still finding it difficult to get through. So frustrating. One new stab, though, at attacking this problem. The Florida governor now says they're going to get help from Publix, the supermarket chain, in administering vaccine sites. Government, not always so big on creating websites that work. All right, well, you keep refreshing abcnews.com for Georgia election results. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts while you wait. It really does help new people find the show. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.